And how's it going, everyone? This is the Done with Graham podcast. Back again. It's been a while, Tim.
It has been.
It's been a few weeks.
We had some scheduling issues between us, but we're now back and living large in at Rue here on the fifth floor of the Buffalo News headquarters at One News Plaza.
We've had bachelor parties, we've had sicknesses, we've had Bills OTAs. A hodgepodge of things kind of getting in the way, but we're back.
We are. We got some Bills.
People wanted it.
Bills chatter we can go on with.
Mini
camp. We have OTAs that have already transpired. Analytics talk. You know, different things. Not a lot of major news since we last podcasted in terms of roster moves or.
That's true, but, you know, the Bills always keep it interesting. You know, in May and June when there really isn't much going on with most teams. I mean, you got the Chantrell Henderson saga, I guess, which he's back in town. But
Rex Ryan kept himself in the news with some interviews.
He did.
You know, maybe some interesting things we can glean from the analytics story and how the Bills execute their philosophy, which seems to fly in the face of some widely held and established analytics tenets.
Well said.
But we're glad that you're here. This is an unfiltered podcast. No credentials needed, so we will not be revoking any credentials.
We're untethered as well.
We're untethered because we go from place to place.
Unpredictable.
We are unpredictable. We could talk about anything.
Unhinged?
Sometimes.
Occasionally unhinged.
We'll go on a rant every now and then.
Yeah. Here and there.
But this seems, you know, just to state, I mean, it's pretty obvious here if you've been watching from the start. This is a pretty mellow, you know, we're trying to fight through it here.
Well, we've got coffee. We don't have alcohol in our hand right now. That has something to do with it.
We're really selling this podcast. Like, you want to listen to this. We're kind of like, we'll talk about something.
But I told people to buckle up when I teased it, too. Maybe I don't think they had to buckle up for this one, maybe.
Well, one of the stories of the day, without getting into a political discussion, though, but it is a journalism discussion, Donald Trump has revoked the credentials and access of the Washington Post. You know, when you're running for president, the Washington Post, you know, probably isn't the organization you want to poke in the eye. But have you ever had a situation where you had your credentials revoked?
I can't say I have, Tim. No, not in my career. I mean, we had the whole media policy thing here at One Bills Drive, but it was just kind of became the mockery that it was, and nobody really abided by it. We tweeted from practice and gave fans what the fans want, because that's why we're there, to tell them who's playing well, who's not playing well, and, you know, it was kind of for nil. I mean, it didn't stand up for more than an hour. But yeah, that's about it. I don't know if you have a story to share.
I wonder what the media policy would be had Donald Trump purchased the Bills. What would have had? This would have happened a long time ago, maybe.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Would have been something. Swiping credentials left and right.
It is remarkable, isn't it? That, I mean, he could have bought this team. It could. This could be Donald Trump's team.
And if it were, he's probably not running for president.
Yeah.
I mean, who's to say? I mean, I guess a sports owner could theoretically run for president, but you'd think he'd be more preoccupied than that.
I think the Donald could do it.
Well, when I covered that ownership situation, and, you know, it was made clear to me that the NFL was not even remotely interested in having Donald Trump as one of its fellow owners, and they were seriously skeptical that he had as much money as he claimed to have, and that's something that we're getting a sense of here through the election, in which, you know, he, for the first time since the 70s, I think, will be the first presidential candidate not to release his income tax returns. So nobody really knows what he's worth, just based on what he says he's worth. But the NFL owners did not think that he had the financial wherewithal to purchase an NFL team, did not take him seriously. But I will say this, they were glad he was involved, because he drove up the price. And the fact that there was another bidder.
Right. Somebody else bidding.
It did not hurt. And so that's why NFL owners were quiet on Donald Trump. They did not come out and say one way or the other. But internally, they were dismissive. outwardly they were just letting him be Donald Trump and drive up the price of the team.
So, credential revoked. When did that happen for you?
It happened for me. I don't remember the year, but it was covering Joe Macy, the boxer here from the town of Tonawanda, and he was climbing up the heavyweight rankings. I don't think he was number one in the world yet, which is where he was when his when he suffered his brain injury. The Macy camp was very upset with the way the Buffalo News covered Joe Macy, and he was with Sugar Ray Leonard Promotions at the time. He was the promoter, and there was the president or whoever the Sugar Ray Leonard was kind of a figurehead and using his cachet for this promotional company. And there was a guy named Bjorn Rebney, who is now in charge of the Bellator mixed martial arts league that's out there. But anyway, this Bjorn Rebney sent a letter to my bosses here, wanted me removed, was threatening litigation and lawsuits for my coverage, and that it was biased on purpose. But anyway, so they revoked my credential. He was about to fight at First Niagara Center, and the Buffalo News went to court, and their stance was First Niagara Center is a building that's owned by the county. It's a public venue. We are a newspaper to cover a news event, and the judge put out where there was an injunction. And so then I was allowed to cover the fight. The day of the fight, a judge ruled, you know, I'm going to need to look at this a little closer. Therefore, in the meantime, you can go cover this fight. But the Buffalo News had purchased me a ticket. So I was going to be in the arena one way or the other. We purchased a ticket. I was going to cover the fight. Of course, the Buffalo News, we can see First Niagara Center from where our seat right now. I was just going to, at the end of the fight, pack up, you know, my notepad and walk to the office and write my story. So I would have covered it anyway.
Well, you know, like back at Syracuse where I went to college, you know, I think all of us that went there, everything we learned was at the Daily Orange, our student newspaper. We owe that paper everything, and it's a tight-knit group. But, you know, the generation before us, I mean, when you had the Eli Saslows, the Pete Thamels, the Chico Harlins, I mean, you're talking the best writers in the country. I can't remember exactly who it was, but there were people who covered the Syracuse teams that are student independent newspaper, you know, independent from the university, where the SIDs pulled their credentials. There were times where they covered games in the stands and, you know, really forced them to bust butt and, you know, work even harder for stories. And they uncovered things that maybe they wouldn't have uncovered otherwise because of that. It is interesting, though. With the Bills' media policy, it's just funny how that made national headlines. You know, you're talking Deadspin, you're talking Barstool, everything.
Yeah, SportsCenter.
SportsCenter, yeah. It was on SportsCenter.
It was on Pardon the Interruption.
Yeah.
It was on the NFL Live. You know, Adam Schefter was talking about it. Called it draconian.
Draconian.
The most draconian media policy.
And at the end of the day, it really could just crinkle it up. I mean, it doesn't have two legs to stand on now because of that very public reaction. The fans could read through it. The fans want information. And when training camp rolls around, we're going to be there providing the information. And it's kind of a slap in the face to tell reporters, you know, you don't know which way a receiver turned on a route, you know, so you shouldn't give play-by-play. I'd like to think that the reporters on the sideline can sift through what's important, what's not important, give that cross-section of what happened. Mm-hmm. And when you add it all up, the scattered play-by-play or the scattered highlights from practice, it does kind of give you a composite view of what happened.
Well, NFL teams, and it's not just NFL, but I think with the exception of baseball, there's really not a lot of strategy that you see at batting practice, but you can come out and watch practice every day and the whole thing. NBA shoot-arounds, you can watch. But anyway, with the NFL and the hypocrisy that you get when it comes to their philosophies on the media and what they see, it's funny because they like to tell you don't know what you're looking at, and yet they take away your access because they're afraid you're going to share too much information with the opposition.
Yeah.
So what is it? Do we not know what we're looking at, or do we know what we're looking at? Because really, and it's not science. It's not neonatal surgery. It is football. It's a game.
It's a game, and if a guy ran a wrong route and all the reporters screwed up and it's an interception, everybody blames the quarterback. Guess what? That can happen at a game, too. And there are 70,000 people in the stands and millions at home watching. And we've talked a lot about this. We're not going to spend an hour talking about this policy. One thing I will say, you know, covering the Packers for what, 4 or 5 years, coming here to the Bills, that the PR department, I mean, they caught a lot of flack for this. You know, last year, access-wise, in the locker room once the season began, great. You know, I don't have a lot of teams to compare it to. Very, very good. So that's why this kind of came out of nowhere, and now it's nil. So let's talk some football. What do you say?
Sure.
Let's dive into your analytics story.
I need to retweet our video link here. I don't know that you tagged me.
Go to the work page. Oh, I did not.
Where am I? Is this the right one?
No, no.
Got to go to the other one.
Yep, there you go.
This, what, where? Where am I going?
You look like
this?
An old man that can't handle the internet right now.
Well,
Tim.
You have two pages.
Well, there's a work page and there's a, go to my Twitter. There's a link on the old tweet machine.
Okay. Well, you can ask me a question. Here we go. Okay. You can talk me. You can ask me.
Sunday,
me while I do this.
Sunday, yesterday, you had a great story, very insightful, comprehensive. You know, we hear about analytics, sabermetrics, advanced statistics,
mm-hmm.
all of this, and we don't really know what it means as it pertains to football. You know, how do you use advanced statistics with football, when there's 22 players on the field, as you wrote, so many different variables, so many different assignments.
Right.
There's just so many layers to analytics in football that you don't have in baseball, you don't have in any other sport. How did you originally kind of tackle this story, and what was your objective?
Well, I reached out to a lot of people who I respect who deal in analytics, and my question to them was, this is a very broad topic, football analytics. What is something that hasn't really been covered yet, or what is something that you think has been underreported? And we just were able to talk from there because a lot, you can Google football analytics and go down a lot of different rabbit holes because
yeah.
It's a dense subject. It's very complicated to understand. There's one of the basic, just to give an example of how complicated it is, one of the basic metrics in football analytics is done by Football Outsiders called DVOA.
Right.
And DVOA, if you go to, basically what DVOA is it takes into consideration every type of down and distance situation and a play that is run and gives you an average expected production
mm-hmm.
for that play and that situation league-wide. And then if you exceed that, whatever that production is on a given play, then you have a plus rating for that play or a minus rating. And it's just to see who is most effective. And there are players over the course of a season who exceed the average expectation on that play, or teams that do,
mm-hmm.
offensively or defensively. But if you go to Football Outsiders page and want to see the explanation of it, go to their glossary and explanation. It is 2,200 words is the explanation of what DVOA is.
Yeah.
Because math is hard to explain in a very, you know, this is complicated math. And so the ideas, the principles of football analytics, you know, here's a very classic analytic in sports. Earned runs times 9 divided by innings pitched. That's an ERA. That's pretty simple.
But yeah.
Earned runs times 9. Divided by innings pitched, and you get an ERA. Same thing, very simple concepts for WHIP, for you know, on-base percentage and all these things. But in football, to figure this out, 2,200 words. So it's just hard to communicate. So imagine if you're somebody with a mathematical background, and you need to explain to this football coach who has been dealing in things like fundamentals and strategy and all these other things about a DVOA or why this player is better than the other. I mean, at some point, a football coach is just going to be like, well, I don't understand.
Right, just let me coach football.
So you could have the greatest analytics staff, but if they can't communicate the concept, then
mm-hmm.
it's useless. And so that was really the gist of my story to a certain degree. And then the other part of it, too, is just the secrecy of it. Nobody
yeah.
wants to give you their secret sauce or their special recipe. This is something or each team has and holds in its dark corner that is proprietary, and they don't want to share. And so you don't really know what's working in the NFL until enough guys start moving around in different organizations and start sharing it. So if there's something that becomes a big hit in football analytics, you're probably not going to know about it for several years until
yeah.
it gets out. Because first off, it needs to be tested to a certain point to where it becomes an accepted practice, at least for that team, and then it needs to kind of by osmosis get to the other teams, mm-hmm. as opposed to baseball, which Moneyball hits, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, oh yeah, Bill James and all these stats. Let's just it just rolls out, and everybody can do it if they want to.
And you've got a pitcher pitching to a batter. I mean, it's a lot more simplified.
Oh sure, it's one
baseball.
On one. Baseball
it's
is one on one.
It's a one on one.
And even wildly drastic strategies, like let's say Earl Weaver, who just wanted to hit home runs. Or Harvey Wallbangers, you know, the old school guys, versus Tony La Russa's small ball. Yes, you know, there are differences in that, but really that only comes into play when there are guys on base. It's still a pitcher versus a hitter. Yes, you and now you see a lot more shifting, you know, like the Ortiz shift.
Yeah.
You can see that a handful of times in a game against guys who, you know, it used to be the Ted Williams shift. It used to be for the superstars.
So
and now they'd use it, you know, it's... 3-and-D players in the NBA.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah.
10 years ago, the phrase 3-and-D did not exist. Now every team either has or is desperate to find a 3-and-D player. And what a 3-and-D is, for those watching who don't know, is a guy who shoots three pointers and plays defense, and he doesn't necessarily do anything else.
Doesn't have to dribble really.
Doesn't need to do mid-range shooting. Doesn't need to post up. Doesn't need to, you know, rebound or get into traffic. What he does is generally, if he gets in the corner. For that that corner three, or at the top of the key, or the top of the circle, so that way he shoots and he's back on defense.
Yeah,
and that's all he does.
Yeah,
and it's turned out that because of analytics, the NBA was able to say this is a valuable player that we didn't even know existed before.
I mean, all of basketball. You watch any game this postseason, or really for the last, I'd say, I don't know, 2-3 years. It's a game of role players. I mean, you are drafting players to really fit a cookie cutter. Role on your team. Golden State has mastered it better than anybody else. Obviously, San Antonio really has. With football, though, and I'm glad you brought this up in your story, it still comes down to the quarterback, doesn't it? Like, it's if you either have one or you don't, and that can cover up a lot of warts on your team. I mean, you see it whenever one of them goes down in Green Bay when Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, New England when Tom Brady gets hurt, or Peyton Manning. You know, it just is. Everything changes if you don't have the elite quarterback on the field,
right.
And when it comes down to it, it just helps to suck and hope you suck in the right year.
Well, that's one of the things that Bill Barnwell was quoted in my story about. You have the Cleveland Browns approach that we don't know how it's going to work, but Bill Barnwell said that it is a prudent approach, it's a cautious approach, and it is a wise approach. With, you know, the Browns have gone all in with analytics, bringing in Paul DePodesta,
yep.
who was the guy portrayed by
Jonah Hill
in Moneyball, the movie. And he worked around, you know, he was with the Mets for a little bit, and now he's the Browns' brain trust guy. Sashi Brown, who is the general manager, he's also a big analytics guy. So they're going top to bottom, buying in on analytics. That doesn't mean it will work.
But they might as well, because they're the Cleveland Browns.
Right. But it's as Bill Barnwell used the analogy, they're using a 401k, investing prudently for the future. Whereas you had Jim Irsay, who bought a scratch-off ticket and became a millionaire.
Yeah.
When that was what you said.
Yeah.
The Colts sucked for a year because Peyton Manning hurt his neck and got the first overall pick and ended up with Andrew Luck. So you have a lot, but it's not that's not the smartest way. But there are enough anecdotal moments like that where people sit back and say, well, I'm just going to wait for my Andrew Luck.
Right.
And it doesn't happen. And so you need to have some sort of analytic approach to building your roster smartly.
And everything that analytics, sabermetrics, advanced statistics, all of that tells you is you should probably trade down in the draft. Instead of trading up.
Yes.
You get more darts to throw at the dartboard. One of those picks is going to work out. So that brings us to a trade that really could decide whether or not this current core of playmakers, this current offense for the Bills succeeds or fails, the Sammy Watkins trade.
Right.
They gave up a ton to trade up to get Sammy Watkins a couple years ago. You know, we did the panel at the Buffalo News talking to the Tim Browns and the Chris Carters and the Ian-Joy Reeds all about this to figure out if the trade worked out. So let's kind of combine forces here with your analytics studying and talking to the experts that you did. What do you think about that trade now? And then you got some of these football guys who love Sammy Watkins and think
right.
if there's a star, you should get that star, and he's somebody that can change your team. I mean, that's kind of what we would say.
That's football talk.
That's football
talk.
Yeah.
Right. But the analytics say that you should rarely, italicize the word rarely, underline it, you should rarely trade up in the draft because the price to do so is out of whack for what you get in return. And what the Bills did, they moved up five spots. So they traded that first-round pick, the number 9 overall, the next year's first-round pick, and the next year's fourth-round pick to move up five spots in the draft and take Sammy Watkins in 2014. But the analytics say that, especially because, you know, going back to that seminal Jimmy Johnson draft chart, value chart, is that everything was out of whack. And it has remained out of whack, and the price has just remained. It's like the stock market. Teams expect to get X for moving up a number of spots, and that's the way it's always been, and that's the way it should be. And so unless things get way cheaper, trading up is significantly disadvantageous based on what you could maintain, the assets you would maintain and use on different picks versus the one guy that you get.
And then it's on your scouts to find the right players.
That's right. So, and this is a consensus. This is a universally held view. This is not one, there was a seminal research paper that came out. I keep using the word seminal, but when you're talking about analytics, you need to kind of have a starting point as to where this comes from. But it just totally refuted and destroyed the Jimmy Johnson chart, which kind of was randomly done. It was done by football people. It wasn't done by numbers people. And so this paper says you shouldn't trade up. You have guys like Brian Burke, who's at ESPN and used to do AdvancedFootballStats.com. He's the former Air Force pilot and highly trained mathematical engineer who ESPN hired a year or so ago. Bill Barnwell, Sam Whale, who, all these different people I interviewed. It's like that's what – the numbers say.
I didn't know that Bill Barnwell was drawing NFL interest himself. That was interesting.
Yeah, he's a guy that's been very popular among analytics minded teams around the NFL.
I don't know, dude. I mean, I read this. It was an incredible story. Great points by everybody. I still don't know if football is an analytics game, though. I mean, I don't know.
It's not, by and large.
That's what makes it difficult to figure out.
Here's where I think that it becomes where you get into a serious gray area when it comes to just discussing it. Baseball is so clear-cut analytics. Basketball, because it's 5-on-5, you can isolate certain things, and it also lends itself to analytics, but is less of an analytics game than baseball. Football, you have 22 interdependently moving parts on any given play. 11 guys on one side, 11 guys on the other. How many guys are going to make a mistake on one side of the ball? Let's say two guys make a mistake on the defensive side of the ball, and one guy makes a mistake on the, you don't run the right play, you turn the wrong way, you slip and fall. You can't make a scientific. I mean, it's randomness in many ways.
And that's what
makes they're all running in a certain.
The human element all over the place.
And I think hockey is the least of the analytic sports because of the randomness of it, because of the speed of it, because of the way we talked about the 3-and-D player, and now every team goes out there and finds a 3-and-D guy. I mean, you can't go out and find a guy who's good at banking a shot off a defenseman's shin pad or shin guard.
And how do you know if a hockey player can play through a just jarring pain in his knee, at the end of a third period when you absolutely don't. Anyway, how's that going to affect his performance?
Right.
That's the problem. I mean,
but here's
with
where
analytics,
football,
you have so much human element
absolutely.
In football and hockey especially.
Absolutely. Well, here's where I think football is an analytics sport, or at least can be. It's not the on-the-field stuff.
Right.
Yes, there's, you commonly hear about when to punt or go for it on fourth down.
That needs to change.
There are, obviously there's a chart. There are charts for that, or when to kick the field goal or go for it, when to kick the extra point or go for two, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But to actually go play for play with analytics, like you can with baseball, pitch for pitch, you can in baseball. Based on the count, you can do analytics as to whether or not you see it all the time in old school baseball, double play depth, whether or not you're going to cheat your third baseman in for bunting situations, where you're going to position him in the field. There's all kinds of things that you can do. or a pitcher who tips off his pitch to his outfield or to somebody, so that way they know to shade left or shade right because here comes the curveball or this is a fastball. This guy could pull it. This, you know, base pitch to pitch. But football, I think, where it can be become an analytic game is when it comes to roster building.
Yeah, definitely.
And also in the physical sciences aspect of it. And one of the things that I mentioned in my story is these guys who can wear devices during practice or during games and GPSing to actually see and to maximize things like space, time and space, getting a break, when the guy is going to have the biggest advantage of separation, a receiver versus a defensive back, mm-hmm. or, you know, different things like that. So I know we're getting the really dense conversation, but neither football nor hockey will ever be a play-to-play analytics game.
So in terms of the roster building then, I mean, the Bills have completely just cut against the grain of
yes.
all of this. I mean, they've swung for the fences constantly, especially the last couple of years. The LeSean McCoy trade, the Sammy Watkins trade before that, trading up for him. Taking a chance on a Richie Incognito, that worked out. Taking a chance on character that maybe other teams don't take a chance on, trading up several times.
The Richie Incognito thing you could debate was a smart analytics move because you got a discounted player. You got a good player at a discount. That seems to be economical. That seems to actually be a pretty prudent, you know, mm-hmm. But you need to make more of those decisions. And the problem is, and this is where a team like Buffalo comes into play or gets hurt by it, it's hard. Buffalo has to sometimes overpay to get guys to come. When you're not only because of the stigma of Western New York,
right?
And believe me, it's there. Same thing with the Sabres. But you also haven't won.
Right.
You know, guys want to go to places. They don't give discounts to Buffalo. Players don't give Buffalo discounts.
And that's why I kind of get these moves that, you know, go against everything that you should do on draft day or with running backs. With McCoy and Watkins specifically, I mean, this is a moribund franchise that, I mean, I remember it was a big deal when they signed Langston Walker and Derek Dockery in the offseason.
Right.
They trot them out. These are marquee additions. I mean, that was a big deal.
Landry.
They got to take chances.
DeJuan Landry was a big signing.
DeJuan Landry.
And the reason he was signed is because he couldn't pass a physical, and I think Denver... And there was another place where he wanted to sign first, and he had a neck injury and couldn't pass a physical. So the Bills were like, we'll take you. And that was like a Richie Incognito situation was, we'll take a guy who is a risk and pay him less in hopes of getting good production.
And if it doesn't work out, if they go 3-13, 4-12 this year, you're going to have to change your thinking if you're the Bills.
Sure.
I mean, there's going to be people fired. There's going to be a lot of personnel changes, all of this. And maybe you do... hit the reset button, think long term. You go into draft day dead set on getting 12, 13 draft picks out of that draft, trading down at every opportunity, acquiring as many assets as you can. But right now, the moves they've made have been swings for the fences, and it's either going to work out or it's not.
Right.
Most of the moves they've made. They've shown some restraint with the Tyrod Taylor contract, which I think is good, but it's interesting kind of fork in the road for this franchise, which way they go. You know, you talked to Russ Brandon, and was it a couple of years ago when he came out and said, we're going to embrace analytics, this is something we're going to take on, study, use. You talk to him, how are they using analytics? Because some of the things they've done wouldn't fall in line with everything you just detailed.
Michael Lyons, their analytics guru, works for all departments. I know a lot of people were led to believe... or we just assumed. I don't want to say the Bills' fault or, you know, we're negligent, but I think we just assumed that when you're talking about football analytics, as we are sports reporters, we assume or talk about how he's going to help football operations. But really what Michael Lyons does is runs analytics for all the departments,
which would
include marketing and, you know, ticket sales and the business ventures that they do. And as I... asked Russ Brandon, I said, so is it fair to say that Michael Lyons' impact is seen more in the season ticket pricing structure than it would be on the football field? And Russ laughed, and he said that would be a fair statement. You know, so it's not as though Michael Lyons is, and this was, I think, might even have been the quote that Russ gave me, is churning out numbers and running down the office to hand to Doug Whaley and say, check this out. Mm-hmm. He's a lot more latent than that. And so, you know, Rex Ryan doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to buy into analytics. And we hear about it from his tough talk. And, yeah. You know, so this is the other thing. And I use this phrase on purpose. Mike Tyson used to, you know, made the phrase famous. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Right.
You could give Rex Ryan, somebody like Rex Ryan, all of the analytics in the world. Great numbers, great strategic information about the upcoming opponent and ways to beat him. And if something happens in the third quarter when you're down two scores and Rex decides he doesn't, you know, and the play clock is running down and you got to make a decision as to whether to challenge this next play or challenge the last play or get ready for to call the next play and the crowd is booing, what's he want to do? You know, he wants to punch the other guy in the mouth.
Yeah,
like, we're just going to get
yeah.
It's the old school mentality. It's not, what do the analytics say?
Yeah,
you know, you have to be able to recall them and be ready to go, and that's where
you got a right hand man for that. Most of these head coaches, they have a guy almost literally on their hip feeding this information
Right into their ear in the headset, from the cool confines of the press box where they're, you know. But those guys get heated too, and if the coach doesn't listen to that guy, then it doesn't matter. Your analytics could be the best.
Look at the playoff game for the Bills last year, right? At Kansas City, I think you wrote about this after the game. I mean, they were both non-challenges, right? Didn't challenge. One, a deep catch by Macklin. I mean, it was a game, really.
Right.
And the Bills botched both. Well, in addition to having Marcel Darius drop into coverage into no man's land
right.
and a couple touchdowns, which I asked him about that last week, and he was biting his tongue, shaking his head. He's not sure if his role is going to change or not. And we'll get into all that later. But anything else on analytics?
No, I think we covered it. I mean, it's a great story. It's a weird topic.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it's going to go from here.
I think people see that it's kind of fun. If you're into baseball.
Which I'm not.
That's fine. But a big part of why baseball can be fun is the statistical aspect of it. If you're into that type of thing. I'm not a math guy at all. That was one of my worst
subjects.
Still, there'd
be no math.
Right. I don't need any math. I don't want to be fooled into thinking there will be math.
Yeah.
But baseball numbers, to me, were always just kind of easy to understand. Batting average, an ERA, strikeouts per nine innings, all these different things that you could use to get into the chess match that is baseball. But people don't watch football that way.
No. But that's why it's the most watched sport, though, right?
Right. Well, a great quote from the professor from Syracuse, who I quoted in my story, who said, one of the beauties of football is you could watch a game and have zero, and most, this is, I think, the case for probably 98% of the people who watch a football game. You can watch an NFL game on Sunday and have zero idea what is happening on the offensive line. What other sport can you watch and enjoy and not have any understanding
have any
as to what a third of the players on the field are doing?
Right.
Right?
That's exactly kind of what Herm Edwards was saying for a totally different story was on the future of football. He said, look, people are always going to crave violence, the hitting, the contact. And I don't care how many rules they implement and you know how many concussion lawsuits there are. I mean, as long as football is football, you're going to have that violence. Mm-hmm. Violence isn't analytics. Violence isn't numbers. It's player A crushing player B and us all getting intoxicated off of it every Sunday.
Right.
And that's football. You can't get that in any other sport. Now you get Draymond Green kicking and tapping guys in the nutsack, which, I mean, by the time some people see this, the series might be over, but my God.
The other thing about it, too, is one of the base, you know, you're talking about a base allure for football. Another one of the base allures, maybe this is a separate story to get into, is gambling.
Right.
Like,
oh,
there are
man.
People who bet, but gambling is so much analytics.
Yeah.
Really? You know, you think about it. It's like if you want to be good at gambling, you better understand analytics.
Mm-hmm.
But guys aren't like that. You know, they just want some action. You know, so they don't want to necessarily win. They just get a spread. They make a decision within 3 seconds and say, all right, I'll take that in the 4 points.
Yeah.
Or I'll fill out my fantasy roster this way. You know, and so that's why you sit and watch your football game on Sunday a lot of times, and you don't care what's happening on the offensive line because you don't have offensive linemen on your fantasy team.
Well, you might soon, as you wrote.
I think that
one
would
day.
Be a pretty cool league. I mean, it
but
would be a specialized thing.
But you don't know whose blocking assignment is what at the same time. And these players and coaches, I mean, they get really pissed about that. After they games, when you talk to them and they see their grades on, you know, whether it's Pro Football Focus or reporters picking up Football Outsiders, Pro Football Focus stuff.
Right.
Granted, they like it when they have good grades. But when they don't, when they get bad grades, you don't understand. That wasn't my guy that I was supposed to block. And I think a lot of them have a pretty valid point with that. So.
Or, yeah, the stats, sacks allowed.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know. It's like one of the silliest things to even try to track is sacks allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that assumes that you know what play was called and what everybody's assignment was, which is pretty, you know, pretty egotistical thing to do, to be watching, you know, you or I watching a game and be like, this is what was supposed to happen.
But you know what? Then the counter is, and, you know, Bob McGinn does this better than any reporter. I mean, his grades after games are amazing at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And some players would get upset with him on Monday. And it's like, all right, you know what? Let's sit down in the film room then. Break it down for me. Explain it to me. Jeff Saturday was mad one time.
Mm-hmm.
Veteran center, obviously. He's on ESPN now. I had 1 year with the Packers, and he was terrible. He made the Pro Bowl, but he was benched the same week that he made the Pro Bowl.
I remember that.
Yeah. So earlier that year, I think he was upset about something, and it's just kind of like, all right, then let's talk about it on the phone after the game. And I can't remember exactly what happened. I, you know, maybe he said, no, you know, I can't do that. All right. Then, all right, I'm going to try my best.
Right.
As an observer, I'm going to try my best. All right, let's talk about the Bills. They're in OTAs, mandatory minicamp this week.
Tell me what you think about Marcell Dareus. He is, he's been in a lot of stories. You know, he's been quoted quite a bit. Where do you think he is? You know, you wrote a story about him, and he misses Mario Williams. He's also suffered more setbacks in his personal life, I guess. Now, Marcell Dareus is a very important player on the team.
Yep.
And I think, I don't know, I don't want to get too maudlin about it, but
good word.
Is he, where do you think he is mentally? And there's still a few months to go before you need to worry about it as a Bills fan on the field, but is this a guy that you need to keep an eye on in terms of being prepared for the season? Not that he's going to slack. I'm just saying he's a human being.
Right.
And
right.
He's a human being who's been through a lot. He has been frustrated. He doesn't like to lose. Where do you think he is heading into the season?
I think he's in a lot better place mentally right now than he was the last time he kind of talked extensively for the Sunday story last year. Yeah, when we chatted for that, I don't know what it was, 30, 40 minutes. I mean, there was a point where he walked away. He came back. He's, you know, dropping F-bombs left and right. He's kind of losing it. He's visibly depressed about talking about these people. I mean, literally everyone close to him dies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've done stories on, you know, guys that might have lost a mom or a best friend or a mentor. It's everybody for him. Mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, mentor, best friends, close friends. And just a few weeks ago, it was one of his best childhood friends. And this person who died, he had terminal cancer, was somebody who, when he went back home, he could trust. And let's remember that Marcell Dareus just signed a $108 million contract extension. Well, there's a lot of fans out there that are saying right now, I don't feel bad for anybody making $100 million, and I hear you. Yeah, that's a good point. But these players that sign these big deals, they go home, and everybody's coming out of the woodworks, family, friends, everybody looking for handouts. And he had that big time this offseason. Everybody from all different directions, all angles, coming to him asking for help, and I think it was overwhelming, and this friend was somebody he could lean on, and he died. So to answer your question, I think he's in a much better place. He, just speaking, you know, you can tell it still hurts him, but with a little more confidence, a little calmer, and the reason is he sought help, and he's open about it. A lot of guys wouldn't talk about this, but he's seeing a psychiatrist. He's seeing a psychologist. He's talking to doctors. He's leaning on experts, and he admitted, look, I was really skeptical going into this. I didn't think anybody could really help me. What do they know about me? But they did. They really helped him de-stress with that aspect of the clingers and the hanger-ons and those, he called them snakes.
Mm-hmm.
You got to cut I think his quote was, you got to cut the grass to find the snakes or something. He got help, and he didn't really want to get into it a ton, understandably, and it's a personal subject, but whether they're up here or down there, he didn't say. I think it's both locations in Alabama and Buffalo. Psychologists are helping him a lot right now. But you're right. I don't, as far as the football goes, the X's and O's, where is he at with everything? I think he's still a little unsure. Let's face it, he might be their most talented player, somebody that wants to just rush upfield, shoot gaps, be a playmaker, take advantage of things. In Rex Ryan's defense, a 3-4, he's going to be taking on double teams. He's going to be dropping back at times. He kind of said, look, Rex has a pretty damn big playbook, and they're adding a lot of damn plays in there all the time. I don't know what to expect. Remains to be seen.
Yeah, and you don't know what to expect because some big pieces have changed. You know, Mario Williams being gone, regardless of what you thought of him in his last season or his entire tenure with the Bills, he was still somebody who other teams had to game plan for way more than whoever's going to be in that spot until Shaq Lawson gets back. You're not going to be able to rely on him to do certain things. You're going to be relying on Marcell Dareus more this year, Kyle Williams more, if healthy, Jerry Hughes more. In a different position, also, you know, so you gotta, you know, keep an eye on that. So, yeah, a lot of, you know, it's a fascinating team, you know, and don't get me wrong when I say this to Bills fans, I'm sure they would love it for their team not to be fascinating in this way.
But how many days can they go without being on Deadspin? Right?
Well, I think this is gonna be a fascinating team to watch on a week-to-week basis as they evolve, because you have so much mystery, I guess, on what's going to happen on the defensive side, and the quarterback position, the premier position on any football team, is a wild card. You don't know what you're going to get there. I just think that if you could do worse as a football fan to be following the Bills from a week-to-week basis in 2016 is my prediction.
Yeah.
Whether they win or lose, I think it's going to be really interesting to see the trajectory of these guys.
Who in the hell would have thought that IK Anunoby could be their starting outside linebacker? Right now, it's trending that direction. With Shaq Lawson out until at least the midseason, who knows if he'll even be ready by then without all the practice, the training, and such. I mean, they see something in IK. He was out there with the starters last week, and I think they like Manny Lawson. Is that catch-all was the term Rex used, somebody they can plug in all over the place. Probably still the front runner, but IK Anunoby, who looked like he didn't have an NFL career at one point last year. Look, zilch, nothing. You broke your own quarterback's jaw in two places. See ya. The Bills claim him. He has, I don't know, from the outside looking in, I'm just thinking of a missed tackle on a touchdown against Cincinnati. Zero sacks, a dozen tackles or so. He could be their starter.
Do I need to reset things here?
You know what? Why don't you babble on? I'm going to take a look at this Facebook Live situation.
Okay. It's kind of locked in there, so that way. There we go.
I think we're good now.
Okay. Do you think the audio was coming through?
I think so. I think we're good.
All right, good. So, where were we? IK Anunoby. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's a testament to how flimsy the Bills roster is, or if it's testimony to IK Anunoby's survival spirit. You know, it's hard to root for a guy who cold cocked his quarterback, and at the time, really, you know,
Geno might have owed him a little bit of money.
No, but he jeopardized an entire team season.
Yeah, this is true.
All those guys who you talk about the brotherhood of that locker room,
yeah.
And they went through training camp and all that off season stuff, and here's this guy, a rookie.
Which Rex referenced the punch. I think that was for the first time at his news conference last week after OTAs.
Mm-hmm.
Basically said, you know, IK doesn't want to be known as the guy who punched a teammate. We haven't heard the punch word from Rex in a while.
I don't know. But you know, there's part of Rex that thought that was cool, right? Or else he wouldn't have got the guy on waivers. He wouldn't have picked him up.
Yeah, I don't know who else is picking him up.
What's the analytics say about a rookie punching his projected starting quarterback in the jaw? And how good this guy is at thinking things out.
This is what Rex does, though.
I know.
The giver of second chances. You can look top to bottom with this roster. It's his instinct. It's what he wants to do. You know, took him to the third round, with the Dolphins, Washington, soliciting a prostitute at one point on Backpage.com. So there was his chance this year. Got a little sidetracked there. Offensively, you mentioned Tyrod Taylor. It's only OTAs. I mean, that's the disclaimer with everything here. What we've seen anyways, though, is he looks really good out there, at least in this setting.
Are you concerned about LeSean McCoy's hamstring?
I think you have to be. I mean, who knows behind the scenes what's going on?
We're in mid-June here, so mid-June. We get that.
We get it. Yes.
But hamstrings are...
Hamstring, I mean, that's
what he's had this problem before.
He hurt his hamstring originally in that joint practice with the Cleveland Browns, which was, in retrospect, a terrible idea. I mean, LeSean McCoy and Robert Woods, your starting running back and your number two receiver, both suffered injuries in those practices that lingered through most of the season. McCoy until about, late October, early November maybe, by the time he turned a corner and resembled the LeSean McCoy everybody knew. And Robert Woods, his groin hurt all year. Don't think you'll see the Browns coming to St. John Fisher this year. I think it's a concern because that's the one muscle that backs get to 28, 29 years old like LeSean McCoy is. Those hamstrings, they don't go away. What did Doug Marone say about backs once? Backs are tricky. Hamstrings are tricky for running backs. They're tricky. I think at this point, right now, if you're the Bills, just shut them down. I mean, I would not put them out there for any team reps in minicamp. Training camp rolls around. I mean, you got to be careful with this guy. Granted, you need to get him in physical condition, and he needs to get in line with his blockers. I mean, he's a rhythm back who reads cutback lanes, all of that. But he's played a while. You need him healthy. This is a team that wants to run the ball early, often. He's your stud. Yeah, I think you should be concerned, and they shouldn't do much with him at all until week one against Baltimore.
And you also see that doesn't really matter who your running back is if your fifth-round pick can come in and generate like he did. If Mike Gillisley can come in and do what he did.
That's where we differ a little bit. Gillisley also had, 25 yards on 24 carries in the finale, and Carlos Williams had some injuries, and I don't know, McCoy is at his best. That run against the Jets, it's like a 9-yard loss. He makes 8 guys miss, turns it into a 4-yard gain on 3rd-and-2. I mean, is there another back who can do that in the NFL? He still has that breakaway speed. He lost about 10 pounds last year to maintain that. I think Anthony Lynn will stay on him with that. He's still a rare talent that you want out there. I don't know if it's just a plug and play. The year before without him, they were terrible.
I'm not saying that, but I don't think that whatever plus benefit you get from any the average running back in LeSean McCoy is worth the money that LeSean McCoy is making. That money could be spent somewhere else.
That could be spent somewhere else. That's a good point.
That money could be spent on a Stephon Gilmore extension, or that money could be spent on Tyrod Taylor if you were of a mind to sign him, or whatever. Or of going out in free agency and getting another pass rusher to handle Shaq Lawson being injured, or whatever, or an offensive lineman for your right side, for anybody to the right of Eric Wood.
Right.
I think that's my point.
That's what back with Mario Williams making $100 million himself and his cap number. There was a player when everything was kind of hitting the fan last year with Mario and guys were talking and unhappy, who raised that point exactly and said, look, at his number, this player told me, we could have 5 starters for that amount of money. And that's where you got to be careful with this money that you're handing out, I mean, there's some really tough decisions. Let's get into Gilmore a little bit. He's going to be there at minicamp. Said as much on Twitter today himself.
The Marshawn Lynch line, I'm here so I don't get fined,
with a
winky face emoji. So I don't know if that means he's going to participate or not. But it would be interesting if he showed up but didn't participate.
Could be. And they would, they'd sell it as he's rehabbing from the shoulder still. So I don't think he'll do much. They want a new deal. And the two sides have talked. But everything I've heard is no deal is imminent. It's still early. Let's remember, Darius signed his extension into a contract year that was the third preseason game against the Browns, maybe the second preseason game. And he kind of went off in the locker room, said, they're treating me like I'm a dime a dozen. Bam, you got a new deal right after that. Gilmore could still get a deal before the season starts. But right now, I think it's trending the direction of him playing into a contract year. let's see. I mean, there's still some time here, but if you're Gilmore, you see the money that Josh Norman got, you see the money that Janoris Jenkins got, you're going to put yourself probably in that ballpark, if not above it. You're talking 14 a year, I think, would be about it. He played one-on-one coverage where Norman didn't, you know, exclusively one-on-one coverage where Norman played a lot of zone. I think that their camp wants to be paid as such, and the Bills, whether they're still considering the Tyrod Taylor extension and they just don't have the funds right now, mm-hmm. they're not prepared to go there right now.
Yeah, it'll be one of the great storylines, I think, coming up, similar to Jarris Byrd a few years ago. And I know Bills fans have, you know, polarizing views on Jarris Byrd and probably glad that the Bills did not re-sign him because of the injuries that he keeps having and hasn't really made the impact that the Saints wanted him to have. But I see a similar situation where he is the most important defensive back in your entire secondary, which Byrd was at the time, coming up for a contract, a franchise situation, a guy who doesn't want to be franchised because of what you said. He deserves, you know, what he demands on the market, similar to what Jarris Byrd said. This is what I demand based on what the market says. So this could be one that, you know, we're talking about at this time next year, you know, with a franchise tag or whatever. Can the Bills free up enough money to sign this guy?
To bring it back to analytics, I mean, this is the perfect example. When you're building a team, what positions do you value financially? I think it's quarterback, left tackle, shutdown corner. Probably those are the top three I think a lot of GMs would agree on. The Bills, they gave Cordy Glenn a lot of money. He's one of the richest left tackles in the game. Those other two positions right now, those are big unknowns.
Right.
They're both going into contract years, and they're trying to figure out, do we have a $20 million quarterback? Do we have a $14 million cornerback? And those two decisions might decide whether or not Doug Whaley is this team's GM, whether or not Rex Ryan is this team's head coach. They got to get it right.
What a quandary it is for the Bills. They obviously want Tyrod Taylor to be great this year. What if he is? Can they afford him? Can they afford the guy if he's great?
If he's great and you're Tyrod Taylor, I am... you know, you're wanting to get into free agency because there are teams lining up.
Brock Osweiler, you know, I want to get some Brock Osweiler money, you know, of all things. So, yeah. So the Bills, I mean, this I guess would be the lose-lose situation is if Tyrod Taylor plays great and they don't make the playoffs, because then you're in a situation where he helped himself on the market to where we're going to have to pay a lot of money to keep him,
right.
And yet we're still looking at 17 or, you know, going on 18 years and no playoffs.
You could say this for a lot of teams, but, man, if he gets hurt, they're in trouble. I mean, we say that a lot, and you could really go all 32 teams with that opinion. But, man, this team especially, you know, I know Rex has really been standing up for EJ at every opportunity. He said he was, quote-unquote, red hot at a practice that we didn't see. What we have seen has been multiple pick sixes, has been EJ that we saw in London. They're not going to pick up that option. He's going into contract year, as I thought that scout last year put it perfectly in that, look, this is an anonymous scout, personnel executive I talked to. Here's a big, strong guy that doesn't throw like a big, strong guy. It's like he's throwing darts.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't changed, three, 4 years in. Cardale Jones is a project. I mean, he's not ready to be a number two right now. He's fumbling handoffs. He's running into his fullback. He's fluttering passes. And, hey, maybe he's a franchise quarterback down the road. Who knows? Not right now. Tyrod Taylor goes down. Even if it's just a couple games, the Bills, that might be it.
Right.
So
that may have been
important,
the case last
important
year.
Fella.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah.
He's all right. How long have we been at it here?
Well,
about an hour?
We're at 53. We got some questions on Twitter.
Yeah, let's get into the
questions.
Let's
rip those off real quick. And as always, you guys can, you know, ask us questions now on Twitter or in the comment section on Facebook. Sorry, we've kind of been talking a lot, so I haven't been getting to
it. Here we go. Let's wrap this. Let's first question, even though it'll be a little outdated, perhaps, by the time you may watch this. But if you're watching live, it's fresh. Better odds, Bills winning the division or the Cavs coming back in the series?
That's a good question by Charles Gordon. I'm going to say the Bills win in the division, better odds. McTavish and Brady be suspended 4 games. I like their odds better than the Cavs getting out of this hole, even with Draymond.
You have Draymond Green out, and if they, okay, so that's enough to win a game. Then they go home. Maybe that's enough to win a game. That's a lot of ifs. Then you still have to go back and win it at the Oracle.
What's up with LeBron James getting so passive in the big moment? I mean, that game, it was mind-boggling. How many times did he drive into the paint and kick it out?
Just, this is not new, right?
It's not new. You're 6'8", 6'9", 255. You're a runaway freight train. Get to the rim, man. That was just maddening to watch.
I think the problem with the Cavs is they are in a three-point shooting mode. And yeah, LeBron James at the rim doesn't help them to that end, right?
Well, I guess it should in terms of drawing defenders in, kicking it out, having these other guys hit threes.
They don't do that.
They're not.
They don't do that.
All right.
All right, so I wanted to get that question in from Charlie.
All right, you got another one there? And you can fire them off here on Facebook Live as well.
Let's see what we have here. I got some, I think I got some Facebook. No, I think you're getting all the Facebook questions.
Well, some of them are buried right now. All right. Dead air. Any Shaq Lawson update? Matt Ruggs asks on Twitter. No update. I think it's, you know, he's going to rehab the shoulder. He had the surgery. They want him back to 100%. It's going to be probably a mid-season deal. And I don't, remains to be seen. Maybe he does help them. Maybe they're in the hunt at that point, and he gives them that pass rush. Right now, it's life without Shaq Lawson for the Buffalo Bills.
I don't think there's much more to say that I can add to that. Eric on Facebook wants to know if ESPN used to give me Brock Osweiler money. Relative to what journalists make, it was Blaine Gabbert money.
There you go.
Scott Swingle, our good friend. I don't like to say too much more about Scott, because I think he likes to remain in a certain anonymity. Okay. But on Facebook, Scott asks, if Carlos Williams stays healthy in 2016, and that's a big if, might as well part ways with an aging McCoy unless there's a big cap hit. Now, we just talked about that, but what about that? What if McCoy's hamstring lingers through training camp? And the Bills have this guy that they can't count. Do they keep him? How surprised would you be if the Bills cut LeSean McCoy if the hamstring continues to linger?
It'd be a ballsy move, wouldn't it? And they drafted Jonathan Williams. They've got Mike Gillisley, Carlos Williams, obviously. They just added Boom Heron out of nowhere. And yeah, you got James Wilder Jr., who looked pretty good in the practices we saw anyways. I don't know. I think that right now they're kind of all in with LeSean McCoy, and Rex loves him. The offensive line loves blocking for him. But it's a lot of money for a back, and it makes you think.
Perfect time for this next question. I'm going to ask you this.
Eric Shoemaker.
He wants to know how you predict the running back depth chart come Labor Day.
This is a team that still values running back, unlike others. Blade Labor Day. Let's go LeSean McCoy, Carlos Williams, Jonathan Williams, and I think they go
whoever their best special teamer is, probably.
I mean,
Jerome
Felton could be on the bubble with the money he's making, but right now they seem to still want a fullback.
They keep four tailbacks?
I think they keep four tailbacks. I think they can throw Gillisley in there right now. Yeah. We'll see. There's a lot to go here still. But the main three guys will be McCoy and the two Williamses.
Sorry I butchered your last name there, Eric Shoemaker. Not this Schumacher. I'm going auto racing there. What do you got? Any more questions?
Hey, Chris Biella, former Franklinville track and field teammate, chiming in. What's up, Chris?
Is that right?
Yes. Who do you feel will be the top three wide receivers? I think you're looking at, well, Sammy Watkins, they say, for week one. I think they're going to really be careful with him, like they should be with McCoy. Robert Woods, who's healthy finally, and Robert Woods just had a phenomenal catch last week. He outstretched along the sideline, tapped his feet down, dotted the eye, all that long game. Looks like a different receiver. He'd be your number two. Number three, man, completely wide open. Maybe one of those veterans, maybe a Boykin, maybe a Leonard Hankerson. But I'm going to say right now, Desmond Lewis. Desmond Lewis.
Dark horse.
Yeah, he's got the best frame of the bunch. He's 6'4", 215, and he had a one-handed catch last week and just kind of like spun the ball in the end zone. I mean, you're seeing a confidence in him that you didn't see at all last summer. I mean, he really struggled as a rookie. Coming from Central Arkansas, that's a pretty big jump. But sometimes we forget, like these during the season, you know, Desmond Lewis is just on the practice squad up until the last game, and nobody's talking to him. Nobody hears from him. But that's where the growth is. I mean, he's pretending to be the other team's best receiver on the scout team week in and week out, going against Stephon Gilmore. Boy, that's a lot of experience right there. So right now I think, hey, I don't way too early. But
it's such a mishmash on that depth chart. You know,
yeah.
not I mean, other than Des Lewis, you know, all those different guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have no idea what's gonna happen there.
All right, let's end it with this from Eric. Tim, do you think Doug Whaley and Rex Ryan's jobs are on the line?
Well, Jim Kelly thinks so.
He does.
You know, that's something that we didn't get into. Jim Kelly at his golf tournament, or no, he was on Jim Rome.
Right.
Right about the time of his golf tournament.
The day after he went up in a helicopter with Rex Ryan and spun around the golf course.
Right.
And dropped balls. He said on Jim Rome's program.
If the Bills don't go to the playoffs, that Rex Ryan is probably out of a job and that Rex knows it. You know, so it wasn't just what Jim Kelly thought.
Jim Kelly's in the know, too.
He's an employee of the Buffalo Bills. He talks to these guys. Now, is he in the know as much as, you know, maybe not as much as you would think just because he's Jim Kelly, but, I mean, the guy's around. He's actually an employee of the team. So,
yeah.
Yes, I do think so. I think that it really does matter how they miss the playoffs. And we've talked about this before. It's not just black and white, do you miss the playoffs? If they start off 2-5 and close the season strong, and let's say they do well in the division like they did this past season. I mean, there are ways they lose a couple of close games where you can chalk it up to a bad call. You know, there are all kinds of ways that you can deflect and come up.
Jack Lawson's out half the year. The hand-picked first year.
Yeah, come on, Terry and Kim. We didn't have our guy Shaq Lawson. You at least have to let us, you know, take a look at have our guy for a full year before you decide. You know, that game late in the season really cost us that the ref blew the call and Tyrod Taylor, you know, came out of a game for a series because his helmet was broke or I don't know what. You know, there's all kinds of things. It's going to matter how they don't make the playoffs.
Yep. And maybe they do. Maybe they break the streak.
If they do go to the playoffs, then it's moot. You know,
right.
they're building statues
of Rex Ryan outside.
Right. Some teams, it does matter how you make the playoffs. There are teams that make the playoffs and the guy gets fired.
I mean, Tom Brady could be out the first four games.
Mm-hmm.
Very real possibility.
Right. So I do think it's on the line, but not as black and white as make the playoffs and you're out.
All right. Send it right there.
Yeah.
Bam.
I like it.
Thanks for watching, listening, however, wherever. We appreciate it, and we will be back next week. What do you think? After a little mini hiatus, let's keep it rolling
next
week.
I have no problem with that.
All right. Thanks, guys.